Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. Two big stories Friday. This was a bombshell in the trial of Michael Sussman. Now, you've heard about the trial. It's been going on this week, and we'll get into detail with that Jim Trusty segment we have coming up this morning. But to give you the headline on it, Robbie Mook is the former campaign manager for Hillary Clinton. He took the stand during the trial of Michael Sussman yesterday, and you may know that Sussman is charged in the special counsel's probe, John Durham. Sussman charged with lying to the FBI during the Trump-Russia investigation after he brought the FBI unverified evidence concerning Trump and Alpha Bank. Well, in the testimony, Robbie Mook said that the 2016 Democratic presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton, agreed to provide information about a link between Trump and a Russian bank to a reporter, despite the fact that her campaign was not certain about the truth of the allegations. Mook said the decision to release the Alpha allegations to a reporter was discussed with senior campaign officials, including senior policy advisor, and now the White House National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan. So what does all this mean? Well, it started that story that continued into the Trump presidency. This is Jake Sullivan back in 2017 on CNN.
What we learned during the campaign was that very serious computer science experts, people who work closely with the United States government, had uncovered this secret hotline between the Alpha Bank, the Russian bank, and the Trump Organization. Now, of course, we didn't know for sure if, in fact, that were the case, but we knew that it should be investigated, and we knew that given how serious these computer scientists were, they weren't just making up crackpot theories. So it wasn't surprising to learn that even as of last week, the FBI is still looking into this.
And do you have any idea what they're looking for?
I don't. Of course, I don't have a line into the FBI on this, but what I know based on public reporting is that there is very unusual server activity between this Russian bank and the Trump Organization, which suggests contact that took place over the course of the campaign.
So that is our current National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, perpetuating the lie that was started by the Hillary Clinton campaign with Hillary Clinton's approval. How about that? Well, the other big story yesterday, we've heard all about Title 42. Well, the Department of Justice has announced that they're going to appeal the ruling of a judge already. Now, what happened is that the Western District of Louisiana judge Robert Summerhays granted a preliminary injunction on Friday, and that blocks the Biden administration from following through on the administration's plan to end the pandemic immigration order on May 23rd. You may recall the Trump administration invoked Title 42 in March of 2020, which effectively closed the border to migrants, including those seeking asylum, if they didn't already have legal permission to enter. At the time, President Trump said the CDC had to invoke the health order because of the nation's top health care officials' concern about COVID-19. Well, the judge has kept Title 42 in place, but, as again, the Department of Justice announcing on Friday evening it will appeal the decision handed by the judge, which blocked the administration. So, doubling down on dumb once again. What else is going on? How about that stock market this week? How about that stock market? On Wednesday, stocks went down over 1,100 points, steepest one-day drop since the onset of the coronavirus pandemic in March of 2020. The week ends out an eight-week losing streak, the worst since 1932, the height of the Depression. Even CNN's Erin Burnett is on the case.
Stocks plunge, the Dow closing down more than 1,100 points today. That is the biggest loss since 2020 at the height of coronavirus. And it was just yesterday that Walmart stock suffered its worst day since 1987. U.S. inflation levels, particularly in food and fuel, created more pressure. And that pressure is hurting Americans. It is outpacing any wage increases, and it is doing so everywhere. And the economy is the number one issue for voters.
Okay, that's CNN's Erin Burnett. So the new White House press secretary is Karine Jean-Pierre. She was asked about the stock market in a press conference this week at the White House.
Nothing has changed on how we see the stock market. That's not something that we keep an eye on every day. I'm not going to comment about that from here.
I'm not going to pay any attention to it, whatever. How does it make you feel? Well, I'm sure you're aware of the president's Operation Fly formula. You know, his name's gotten a lot of heat, and we'll talk to Jennifer Harper about that this morning, the criticism all over the place on Twitter. Something about Operation Fly formula just sounds a whole lot different than Operation Warp Speed. I mean, which one of those sounds more effective? Anyway, the first flights of the expedited baby formula include U.S. military aircraft. The Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, ordering the first flights supporting the Operation Fly formula program. They're leaving out of Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany over the weekend. The flights will comprise U.S. military aircraft due to the urgency of the situation, the words of the Secretary of Defense. So finally, they're taking care of one problem. First flights will transport 132 pallets of the Nestle Health Science formula. We're at 6:18. It is the Saturday Morning Update. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Maryland on the Beltway, from Prince George's County to Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, you're not hitting your brakes on the inner loop or on the outer loop. If you're traveling between the two beltways in Maryland, either on the BW Parkway or 95, I don't have any reports of any crashes or construction on the northbound side or on the southbound side. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're at speed in both directions. And at the Bay Bridge, two lanes are headed east and three lanes are coming west with no delays on either shoreline. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert today for this early season high heat and humidity. Some records may be possible today with highs into the low and mid-90s under mostly sunny skies. A few showers and storms possible, mainly west of D.C. It'll be warm and muggy tonight, lows in the 70s. A cold front will approach tomorrow, bringing the chance for afternoon storms, high temperatures in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
76 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:19, the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Well, it is the 11th day in a row of gas at all-time highs. We're up to $4.59 a gallon, according to the AAA. That's the national average. Where were we when President Biden took office? $3.04. So we're up $1.55 a gallon. It's been 100 days since the last presidential interview with anybody on network television. Remember, the last one was the interview with Lester Holt during the Super Bowl. Kind of had to do that one. President has not held a press conference. Ran the whole presidential campaign out of the basement. Now he's running the presidency from the basement. At least the basement at the White House has some really neat rooms in it and a great China display down there. His approval rating, an all-time low for the Associated Press for the president, 39% approval rating. We could go on and on and on about that. About those gas prices, Secretary of Energy is Jennifer Granholm. She was on the Hill for testimony this week. She got into it with Senator Josh Hawley. This was an interesting response from the Secretary of Energy.
And you can thank the activity of Vladimir Putin for invading Ukraine and pulling especially
those barrels. With all due respect, Madam Secretary, that's utter nonsense. In January of 2021, the average gas price in my state was $2.07. 8 months later, long before Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine, that price was up over 30%, and it has been going up consistently since.
Okay, told her, didn't he? Deb Haaland is the Secretary of Interior. She was on the Hill for testimony as well this week, and she was asked a question by Senator John Barrasso.
Do you believe that gas prices are too high?
Americans are still recovering from this terrible pandemic, and there are a lot of other world events that are making things difficult for all of us.
So it sounds you're unwilling to say that gas prices are too high.
We're doing all we can, Senator.
Okay, that makes me feel a lot better about everything. Well, you know that the vice president, of course, is tasked with the border security and getting at the root cause of all the problems at the border. Haven't seen too much of her results on that yet. But she is out there, as of yesterday, in Fairfax, Virginia, promoting electric school buses.
Think about it. Yellow school buses are our nation's largest form of mass transit. How about that? Every day. So, yes, and let's applaud, because it gets them where they need to go. Now, I've spoken to a number of drivers, for example, who have recently switched to electric buses, and they stressed the importance of a quiet engine. It helps the drivers hear the road.
It helps the drivers hear the road? How do they hear the road over all the screaming and yelling children in the bus? Who writes her stuff? Or does she just go off the cuff? I don't know how you feel about all this, but it's kind of scary at this point. The minority leader of the House, of course, is Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, and he's tried to reach the president, but he's had a little trouble at that.
I've only seen the president a couple times. He's never called to ask. I've reached out numerous times. Do you know when he decided to pull out of Afghanistan, I called the basic public switchboard to ask to talk to the president? The White House then called to wonder, was it really me calling? That was the one time the president actually took my call. I would love to work. Look, he is sitting as president of the United States. We want the best for this country. We want to work together. If he's going to stop working with us, it's no different than he's done the entire time he's been president.
So the president not working with the Republicans, obviously. He's only the House minority leader, and the president doesn't speak to him. Nancy Pelosi ratcheting things up. You know, you've heard all of the controversy over the leak at the Supreme Court, the Roe versus Wade draft decision leaked, and a lot of protests around the country. And instead of trying to calm things down a little bit, you know, all the protesters out in front of the justices' houses, which is illegal to try and intimidate a Supreme Court justice. But here's what Nancy Pelosi had to say about the Supreme Court.
Let's not take our eye off the ball. The ball is this court. Beware in terms of marriage equality. Beware in terms of other aspects of it. The fact is, this is a dangerous court to families, to freedom in our country. And that is why people have to mobilize.
Oh, dangerous court. That's a nice thing to say about the Supreme Court. That's not going to motivate some crazy to maybe do something stupid. Whew. Well done, Madam Speaker. How about that Hunter Biden story? NBC News published a lengthy report on Hunter Biden, based in part on a copy of his infamous laptop hard drive. NBC News findings raising, quote, questions about national security, business ethics, and potential legal exposure. That's a quote from NBC News. The report was published on Thursday, found that between 2013 and 2018, Hunter Biden accumulated $11 million through his position as an attorney and Burisma Holdings board member, as well as with his work with a Chinese businessman who has been accused of fraud. The report noted that Biden, a recovering drug addict who is under a federal tax investigation, spent his money quickly on lavish items. This is coming from NBC News. Quote, expenditures compiled on his hard drive show he spent more than $200,000 per month from October 2017 through February 2018 on luxury hotel rooms, Porsche payments, dental work, cash withdrawals, too. A lot of cash to burn through if you're running up $200,000 a month. NBC also reported that an ex-business partner of Biden advised him to amend his tax returns to include the $400,000 in income from Burisma, the Ukrainian energy firm at the center of President Trump's impeachment proceedings in 2019. Of course, the contents of Biden's laptop, first reported by the New York Post in 2020, prior to the election, NBC News, of course, ignored it at that time, as well as all of the mainstream media. And then you've got Hillary Clinton and her team making up stories about Donald Trump. 626, Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, Pennsylvania's Republican primary for the open U.S. Senate seat is too close to call. It's likely headed for a statewide recount to decide the winner of the contest between heart surgeon-turned-TV celebrity Dr. Mehmet Oz and also former hedge fund CEO David McCormick. Recount would mean that the outcome of the race may not be known until June 8th, the deadline for counties to report the vote tallies. The first flights of infant formulas from Europe, authorized by President Biden to relieve the deepening U.S. shortage, will arrive in Indiana aboard military aircraft. That's according to the White House, which says 132 pallets of formula are en route to the United States. The head of the U.S. Forest Service is suspending planned burning operations to clear out brush and small trees at all national forests while his agency conducts a 90-day review of protocols and practices. Made the announcement Friday, citing the hot and dry weather and extreme winds that have led to explosive fire behavior across the Southwest. 6:31, it is the Saturday Morning Update. Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In D.C., on the Anacostia Freeway, northbound on 295, there is construction. Roadway is down to one lane between the 11th Street Bridge and Pennsylvania Avenue. In Maryland, on the inner loop of the Beltway in Greenbelt, you'll find a crash. Right lane is blocked after the Good Luck Road overpass. In Virginia, on the Beltway, outer loop in Merrifield, there is a crash. Two right lanes are blocked approaching 66, exit 49. And on 95 in Virginia, northbound in Lorton, there is a crash with three lanes blocked after the Lorton exit, exit 163. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert today for this early season. High heat and humidity. Some records may be possible today with highs into the low and mid-90s under mostly sunny skies. A few showers and storms possible, mainly west of D.C. It'll be warm and muggy tonight, lows in the 70s. A cold front will approach tomorrow, bringing the chance for afternoon storms. High temperatures in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
76 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:32, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes Inside the Beltway, the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I never thought baby formula would be one of the biggest news stories of the month so far, and it's made it into your column.
Well, yes, in a very interesting way. And just to refresh our listeners this morning, maybe you know that the president is hoping to bring in a lot of much-needed infant formula for our babies around the country. And he declared that this was called Operation Fly Formula, which is they're flying it in. Well, that became an immediate joke online. Let's just put it, it exploded on Twitter, as they say. And a lot of people are saying, Operation Fly Formula? And it got so much attention because it's such a kooky name that it had a Twitter hashtag and everything else. But the favorite thing that was compared to this, I did a media study, if you can imagine doing that, on Twitter. And the favorite image was of Jeff Goldblum playing the fly in The Fly. That's where this was going, and it was one big complaint. Puns, clever observations were prevailing today, and here's just a couple of things. We can start out our morning with something funny, and someone said, good that they're doing something to address this issue and all, but Operation Fly Formula was the best name they could come up with. Someone else said, is anybody else creeped out by that name? And then another said, we're at the fly infant formula in from other countries before babies starve stage of build back better. Started getting mean right there. Another tweet was Operation Fly Formula. Oh, my God, that's awesome. I also want to name one called Operation Huh? And then a lot of people thought it was a new fishing lure. I'm not kidding you about Operation Fly Formula. And last but not least, it's painfully obvious that the dude who makes up operation names at the White House is on vacation. So that's your Operation Fly Formula report for today.
When President Biden came in, he talked so much about kind of uniting the country and everybody working together because he had those decades in the Senate and he knew everybody and could work things out. Well, the House Minority Leader sort of begs to differ on that.
Yes, this was a very interesting moment for House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. And he, of course, is saying that we've got Biden and Hyden, and that all rhymes so beautifully. But even as we have a lot of serious problems that are escalating, and the president should really kind of be more available to Republicans, but he is not. And this is what Kevin McCarthy told Fox on Thursday. He said he hasn't been working with us. I've only seen the president a couple of times. He's never called to ask. I've reached out numerous times. And he said, do you know when he decided to pull out of Afghanistan, I called the basic public switchboard to ask to talk to the president. The White House didn't call to wonder, was it really me calling? That was the one time that the president actually took my call. Think about that. That's Kevin McCarthy saying that. It's an amazing quote that he had for Fox. But anyway, he continues to say, I would love to work with him. Look, he is sitting as president of the United States. We want the best for this country. We want to work together. I requested to meet with him because he's never been to the border. He cited lots and lots of the problems that we're having, you know, including our aforementioned baby formula shortage. The expiration of Title 42 is coming up. That's going to be a humdinger. And also, you know, border security, fentanyl crisis, inflation, crime, energy challenges, all that other stuff. And Mr. McCarthy summed up his feelings by saying everything this president has touched, he has failed at. But he has made America weaker in that process. And I'm like, yikes. And that's kind of where we stand. There's not much communication going, at least according to Mr. McCarthy.
We've seen all the traffic coming across the southern border through the river. What about underground?
Boy, I tell you what. Again, we're going to refer back to our friends over at Fox News. They have a very good reporter down there on the southwestern border named Bill Malugan. And he had some very telling numbers to share this week. He said there were 234,088 migrants who were encountered at the southern border in April, just in April. This is according to the Department of Homeland Security. He said that's the highest number in history. He also says that according to a U.S. Department of Justice, that there are some real depths of drug trafficking currently going on in the southern U.S. border. Here's what he has to say. A federal drug investigation has resulted in the discovery of a sophisticated cross-border tunnel and charges against six people for conspiring to distribute 1,762 pounds of cocaine. And again, this is a release that came from the U.S. Department of Justice this week. This is what this tunnel was about. The subterranean passageway, the Department of Justice says, stretches from Tijuana, Mexico, to a warehouse in Otay Mesa, just east of the port of entry into the United States. It is estimated to be 1,744 feet long, 61 feet deep, and 4 feet in diameter, with reinforced walls, a rail system, electricity, and a ventilation system. And to top everything off, there have been 70 of these subterranean passages that have been discovered in the Southern District of California since 1993. And just to give a shout-out to the people that discovered this monster tunnel, they include the San Diego Costa Pacifico Money Laundering Task Force, Homeland Security Investigation, San Diego Sheriff's Department, Drug Enforcement Administration, Customs and Border Protection, and the United States Attorney's Office. So that's your border report, actually the underground version.
And for people that are not able to sit around and watch congressional testimony all week long, There was a congressional hearing about UFOs this past week. And regardless of what they said on the Hill, what does the American public really think about the potential for aliens?
Well, I always revisit this. It's a fascinating topic, and I try to give it some serious news coverage. And if you did miss it, it was the House Intelligence Committee Counterterrorism, Counterintelligence, and Counterproliferation Subcommittee, which staged this rather significant and interesting press coverage. Not real forthcoming with a lot of went on with that. A lot of people sat through it and some didn't. But anyway, what I did was to bring up our poll numbers. I always have them every Saturday morning to see what Americans actually think. And these are polls that are going back, about a year. So let's just look at a couple of these things. There's some interesting numbers here. This is a Pew Research Center poll. It found that 65% of U.S. adults say their best guess is that intelligent life exists on other planets. Most Americans say intelligent life exists outside Earth, and they do not see UFOs as a major security threat. Again, this is the Pew Research Center. A smaller but still sizable share of the public, 51%, say the UFOs reported by people in the military are likely evidence of intelligent life outside Earth. And let's get a couple more from Pew. Most Americans, 87%, say that UFOs are not a threat at all, or they are a minor threat. 36% said that. 1 in 10 say UFOs are a major threat to U.S. national security. So people are not too threatened by all this as they were perhaps a couple of decades ago. And in general, Americans are not inclined to assume that UFOs are hostile. When asked for their best guess, 17% said UFOs are friendly, 7% said they are unfriendly, and 74% said, nah, they're neither one of those.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. 6:42, the Saturday morning update. We'll talk with Jim Trusty next about the Michael Sussman trial and Title 42, the decision that came down last night. But right now, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Maryland, on the inner loop of the Beltway in Greenbelt, there is a crash with the right lane block after the Goodluck Road overpass. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, outer loop in Merrifield, there is a crash. Two lanes are blocked there, approaching 66, exit 49. On 66, eastbound in Merrifield, crash with the left lane blocked, approaching the Beltway. And on 95 in Virginia, northbound in Lorton, there is a crash. Three lanes are blocked at the Lorton exit, exit 163. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
StormWatch 7 is on weather alert today for this early season. High heat and humidity. Some records may be possible today with highs into the low and mid-90s under mostly sunny skies. A few showers and storms possible, mainly west of D.C. It'll be warm and muggy tonight, lows in the 70s. A cold front will approach tomorrow, bringing the chance for afternoon storms. High temperatures in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
76 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:43 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Breaking news and the inside story.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, thanks for being with us this morning. I know you had a late night on the Fox News channel with Shannon Bream on Fox News at night.
Hey, no worries. Good to see you.
One of the stories you were talking about last night is a story that everybody is talking about. Robbie Mook, the former campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, was on the stand in the trial of Michael Sussman. He's charged in special counsel John Durham's probe with lying to the FBI during the Trump-Russia investigation. Allegedly, he brought the FBI unverified evidence concerning Trump and Alpha Bank. Well, Robbie Mook, on the stand Friday, testified that Hillary Clinton, the 2016 Democratic presidential nominee, agreed to provide information about a link between Donald Trump and Russian Alpha Bank to a reporter, despite the fact that her campaign was not certain about the truth of the allegations. How did that go over in the courtroom?
Well, like a bomb going off. And, you know, this euphemism that the campaign was uncertain if it was 100% true is probably the most optimistic spin on the Russian dossier and the Alpha Bank rumors you could come up with. I mean, it was much worse than just, we don't know if it's 100% verifiable. It's, this is a false story we created. And what was, I think, kind of amazing to the courtroom watchers and apparently to the lawyers themselves was that Mr. Mook was so comfortable announcing that Hillary was fine with peddling this false story, that she was happy to distract from her own issues at the eve of the election, and that she was completely complacent with the idea of peddling this story to the national media, which, of course, ate it up.
It brings up two questions. What does it mean for the Sussman trial, and what does it mean for the possible broadening of the Durham investigation?
Yeah, both are great questions, Rick. So for the trial itself, I think I would just basically say this is a moment of the knights lining up to say protect the queen, and maybe that's the broad objective as well. But for the trial itself, what we're hearing from both Mark Elias, the Perkins Coie partner who testified on behalf of the government, and now Mr. Mook on behalf of the defense, is this suggestion that Sussman was on a frolic and a detour, that he took it upon himself to go to the FBI to peddle the story, and everyone else was just shocked to hear that he would go to the FBI and try to get them to bite on this false story. I have to say, you know, as a defense, maybe it's as good as you can come up with. Remember, there's an actual email in evidence in this case where Sussman says the exact same lie that he's alleged to have said verbally to James Baker, that he wasn't representing anyone. He was just being a good Samaritan when he showed up to peddle the story. But to me, it's very interesting in terms of long run where that goes. I mean, it seems to me you're kind of admitting the misdemeanor and hoping to avoid the felony. It's basically saying, of course, Hillary knew that there was a false story that was being peddled to the media about Russia collusion. It's a great distraction from her own email or server scandal that was going on the eve of the election. But we're supposed to believe that a Perkins Coie partner just completely freelanced the idea of going to the FBI. And I have to tell you, Rick, that's just not how legal representation works. I mean, if you're an attorney for the campaign, you're not just disappearing on your own for something that significant. And, you know, I think they've made a calculation, a kind of a collective calculation, that no matter how the chips fall on Sussman with this fairly threadbare defense, we're not going to let the Durham investigation advance up the chain through Elias to Hillary Clinton. Now, I will say this for the trial. Remember, we're in a D.C. jury. You know, it's 90-something percent Democrats that are in the jury pool. There are three jurors on this trial who specifically contributed to Hillary's campaign. And one of those jurors kind of barely got onto the jury, indicating that he would try his best to be fair, which is probably not the most exciting words to hear if you're the government when he's alleging he'll try to be fair to John Durham. So the backstory for that that your listeners should know when it comes to jury selection is that if a judge wrongfully includes a biased juror, you know, somebody that knows something from pretrial publicity or somebody that has a real strong opinion due to the politics of the case, well, that can be fodder for an appeal for the defense later. If they get convicted, they can go to an appellate court and say, this judge never should have let juror A, B, and C get onto the jury. But conversely, if the jurors are bad for the government, if they say things like, well, we'll try to be fair, and they get on, the government really has nothing they can do about it ultimately. So you could have 12 very opinionated anti-John Durham jurors, and if you get an acquittal, you get an acquittal. There's no appeal at that point. So, yeah, this jury makes everything interesting, even though it should be a pretty strong case for a false statement. You just never know in D.C. how they're taking this all in.
Often we hear about the smoking gun, but in this one we have the smoking invoice, don't we?
We do. I mean, the bottom line is he gives this lie orally and in writing that he is not serving any particular client. He's coming on his own for the good of the FBI. And then he bills for the time. I mean, kind of a sloppy mistake when you think about it. But he billed the campaign for that time at the FBI. And, again, common sense dictates that he wouldn't have freelanced it. But the billing records, which are not privileged, the records themselves don't have attorney-client privilege, that's a devastating nail in the coffin when it comes to whether or not he made this false statement.
Title 42 has been in the news a lot recently. You may recall the Trump administration invoked Title 42 in March of 2020, basically closed the borders to migrants, including those seeking asylum, if they didn't already have legal permission to enter. Of course, that due to COVID-19. Well, Western District of Louisiana Judge Robert Summerhays granted a preliminary injunction on Friday, which blocks the Biden administration from following through on its plan to end the Title 42 statute. And I think it was within minutes, the Department of Justice announced on Friday that it will appeal the decision handed down by that federal judge. What happens here, Jim?
Well, probably bad news overall. A good moment. I think this could be viewed as kind of a short reprieve and not a complete exoneration in terms of where this is all going to go. But look, what happened, Rick, is 24 states came together over time to sue the administration to keep Title 42 from lapsing. Title 42 was this authority granted to CDC to basically stop at least some of the illegal immigration from happening. And you have to remember, this is all about, you know, the difference between some immigration enforcement and none at all. And so this administration kind of latched on to Title 42 for a while to say, well, maybe we'll keep some of the illegal immigrants from coming into the country due to concerns about COVID. But really, the challenge is not all that substantive. The challenge to this removal of Title 42 is a claim that it violates the Administrative Procedure Act. So the administration has said, we're going to terminate Title 42. Remember, they're actively fighting to stop this limit to illegal entry. And they're going to appeal the decision, as you noted. So they're basically fighting it. The states line up and say, look, if we have this giant increase in illegal aliens, it's going to be devastating for all of these affected states. And they point to things like the fact that illegal crossings would go up from 7,000 a day to 18,000 a day without Title 42. And the states gave numerous examples of how expensive it is to deal with illegal aliens pouring in without health insurance, below the poverty level, straining the criminal justice system. Each state was able to describe millions or even billions of dollars in expenses that they would have to suffer because of the increase in illegal entries. And a couple of examples, Rick, that I just thought were kind of fascinating. Arizona says less than 38% of the illegal aliens are getting apprehended at all. They described finding 181 sets of human remains in the desert during 2020. Missouri, pretty far upstream, talked about even back in 2018 having 3,000 illegal alien children in their schools. So each of these states was able to document just how expensive it was going to be to deal with the surge of illegal aliens. And for the moment, the court said, you know what, you violated the notice and comment period that you're supposed to give when you're terminating a law like Rule 42. So I'll grant a nationwide preliminary injunction. So again, we get a reprieve from the actual termination of Title 42, but this administration through DOJ is fighting it hard. They're going to go up a level to the next court, and there's a decent chance that even during the interim, they'll do things like give a notice and comment period to really gut the short-term success of this lawsuit. So we're not out of the woods in terms of Title 42 lapsing, but at least we have a little bit of time past May.
Jim, the incoming Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson made some news in the Washington Post this week, and that's even before she's on the court. What'd she have to say?
Well, they had a couple of questions for her that I think the answers are a bit disturbing. They asked her, you know, how did she take the draft leak of the Roe versus Wade overruling that, Judge Alito had apparently put together? And she started off by saying anyone who's familiar with the court and the way it works was shocked. It was such a departure from normal order. But here's the part that kind of harkens us back to her hearings when she wouldn't define what a woman was. They said, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing to have a leak out of the Supreme Court? And she said, I can't answer that.
Oh.
She said, I can't answer that. And I thought, you know, this is not about pending litigation. There's no actual reason why a justice couldn't give an opinion about the historically bad moment of a draft leak coming out. And she even went on to say she had no comment about peaceful protests, as they call it, outside of the Supreme Court justices' homes. Well, I think this is a really kind of ominous sign, and I tend to draw some larger conclusions from it. The big thing is this. Look, no justice should have any difficulty criticizing the leak of a draft opinion from the Supreme Court. As we've talked before, this is a historic bad moment for the Supreme Court. What I find really interesting and kind of disturbing is some of the conservative justices have had venues to be able to comment on, and they've done so freely. There's no ethical prohibition on them from talking about this. So Justice Thomas recently, Justice Alito, Justice Roberts representing the court have all had pretty scathing words about the concept of leaks coming out of the Supreme Court. There's been a conspicuous quiet, a conspicuous silence from the liberal wing of the court. And I don't understand why it would be so hard to have either a unanimous statement that issued the morning after this leak took place with all of the justices weighing in, or at least to get a feel that every one of them feels the same way, even if in informal venues. So to me, it just continues to nag at me that maybe there's complicity. Maybe there's an actual guiding hand for this leak from one of the associate justices. And obviously it would make sense that they'd be from the liberal wing of the bench. And so, again, no firm evidence there, but very disconcerting that an incoming Supreme Court justice doesn't feel that she's able to condemn illegal protests, because they actually are illegal under the federal code, or at least weigh in on whether it was a good or bad thing to have a draft leak come out.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, thank you very much. You can follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer.
Thank you, Rick. Have a good weekend.
7 o'clock news coming up next. Then we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, KT McFarland, and Tony Schaefer.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.